The Arab Spring started with an unlikely uprising in Tunisia and idealistic voices facing a dictator, chanting in some cases poetry. If one day the people want to live, the poem says, then fate will answer their call, and their night will then begin to fade, and their chains break and fall. An 80-year-old poem from Abu Qasim al-Shabi, a legendary voice of the Maghreb expanse of North Africa. Unlike much of the Arab Spring, though, Tunisia alone has thrown off dictatorship, avoided chaos, and moved toward real democracy. Justice from the decades of repression under dictator Ben Ali eludes society, though. A new commission has been collecting the testimonies of people who suffered torture and violence at the hands of the police and interior ministry. Carlotta Gall, North Africa correspondent for our partner, The New York Times, explains the tensions between religious, military, and secular peoples remain, even as Tunisia has moved forward.
Similar to that of what happened in Egypt, there was a backlash against the Islamists who'd won political power immediately after the revolution. And there was a pushback by the secular part of society and supporters of the old regime, who then forced new elections. And so now it's a much more balanced or divided society, in a way you could say. There were victims of violations for nearly 60 years, but the Islamists make up a big proportion of the recent years under President Ben Ali. It remains to be seen how successful it will be. However, what I found in my reporting was the victims themselves are growing in their strength and their desire to talk and their determination to see some reparation.
You've described a divided society in Tunisia, but with the way that you've described it and the way that politics has succeeded in Tunisia, what we don't seem to have is secularism is seen as equivalent to being a part of the old dictatorship, and Islamists are seen to be part of the victim class here, that it's a much more mixed situation, and this reconciliation won't be pitting one part of society against the other. Do I have that right?
Well, it's complicated. There were victims on all sides, all the opposition political movements, leftists, trade unionists, Islamists, all suffered appalling torture and incarceration, and also a sort of ostracism from society. They were prevented from holding government jobs and so on. Many of them fled into exile. But you've also got a big divide between the secular and the Islamist, and many of the secular groups and movements and parties sided against the Islamists because they were so alarmed at an increased Islamization and, in fact, the beginnings of terrorism. So when it comes to truth and reconciliation, there is still an intolerance and a desire not to really look at, you know, the country's dirty laundry, as it were. And that goes wider than just supporters of the old regime. That also goes people who might be opponents of the Islamists.
Well, you've certainly made clear what the challenges are that are faced by Tunisia. Before we go, do people view this as a call for accountability among people who perpetrated crimes, or more a sense of reparations for people who were victims? Or is it both?
It's both and more. I think there are some people who want to hear the state admit it and acknowledge what they went through. There are some who want money because they feel their family suffered and they were forced into penury. And then I think the ones whose families really suffered the appalling rapes and sexual violence, especially in a country like this, which is an Arab Muslim country that, you know, where honor, family honor is still incredibly important. Some of those people want actual judicial process and imprisonment of the people responsible. So you've got a spectrum of desire. But when you talk to the victims and the human rights people, they say above all, there's a desire for recognition of what they went through. And so that's very much something that can be worked through with different events and public hearings and government acknowledgement of what happened.
Carlotta Gall is North Africa correspondent for our partner, The New York Times. She spoke with us from Tunis. Thank you so much, Carlotta.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.